This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Lainey Stern.
I was born hungry, never felt like I could get enough. There's a hole in my heart, Lord, help me, Lord, in the heavens above. I was born restless, never felt like I stood on solid ground. The earth is moving like all the stars, we're spinning around. Born the privilege, but the whole thieves welcome me. I lived in an elegant universe till you set me free.
This is John Floridus. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the program Lainey Stern. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me on your program.
It's a pleasure and a real honor to have you on the program. We should tell listeners as we get started here, we're doing this interview in a very nice RV in Big Fork, Montana. This is late August. We're on the precipice of September, and it's a little smoky up here as we're in the midst of fire season, but we're here talking to you as part of the Crown Guitar Festival and Workshop. I think you mentioned this is your first time in Montana, correct?
No, it's my second time.
Oh, second time, okay.
3 years ago, we came for the first time, Michael and I.
Oh, right.
To play the festival and to teach during the week.
Oh, okay, great. Well, a lot of our listeners will undoubtedly be familiar with your work, singer, guitarist, and player of an instrument that I want to make sure Ngoni?
Perfect.
Okay, all right. 15 solo recordings, the most recent...
22nd, actually.
Oh, 22nd? I know. Well, you've snuck in a few more since you... put that number on the website, I guess. And as we did mention, Lainey's husband, Mike Stern, has been on the program as well. So good to complete the picture here, the Stern household. Now, I know that you were born in Germany, but I don't know exactly where in Germany you were from.
In Munich, Germany.
In Munich. Okay. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about what Munich was like for you, just growing up when you were a child, and just how maybe music came to be so much a part of your life.
Well, Munich was a town of the arts. It was the old residence of the kings of Bavaria, who were always competing with the kings of Austria and France in terms of the arts. Who had the larger orchestra, the better composers, the better painters, the more beautiful women in the palace? And we have a gallery of the Schöne Münchnerin, which is the beautiful Munich girls. There was like a beauty contest. I mean, the kings were really into, you know, we have a sort of an imitation of the Arc de Triomphe. And it was always like sort of an artsy city. And that's sort of what I grew up in. After the war, it became not just a hotbed of classical music, but also a hotbed of jazz, because the American army was stationed in Munich. And they brought with them the big bands. Mm-hmm. They had their own army big band. And people, when they left the army, often had German wives. And because we appreciated being liberated by you guys so much, we love just every single one of you. So a lot of American German families were started, and they stayed there, and they had a jazz club. Mel Waldron, the famous pianist, settled in Munich. And so I was surrounded. So,
oh my.
I had a very thorough classical and jazz education in Munich. And I started out as an actress, but I had a music formation. I studied classical piano for many years, and I played guitar. I played for fun in bands. And pretty early, too. Very early, yeah.
Yeah, like 11 years old or something?
Yeah, I started playing guitar at 11. I mean, the piano was sort of a required thing, because, you know, I was talking in one of the classes today about it. It's actually not such a bad idea, because you can see the shape of Western harmony very clearly. Black and white keys, and it's very easy to understand the whole thing. But it wasn't my favorite sound. You know, I took some classical lessons, but thank God my classical guitar and voice teacher had a good understanding for teenagers, and she let me play the blues or any kind of rock and pop song that I really wanted to practice, because she said she's supposed to learn the key of A minor. I don't really care how she learns it.
Wow, you know? That's great. That's a really forward-thinking teacher.
She was a really cool. She was the artist herself. She was cool. She couldn't be bothered too much with... I reckon that as a young artist, she probably didn't like it so much herself, you know, the repetitiveness and the structure of classical music, which is fabulous. I wish I had been less rebellious and more eager to learn classical guitar and like the finger picking and all of that, but I just quickly took a pick and said, I am a blues guitarist, mother.
and less than
little do you know.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix is my brother. You may be surprised he plays with his teeth.
Yes, right. And lest any listener not be aware of the drama of bringing a pick into the world of classical guitar, that is in and of itself a very revolutionary concept. That's pretty much drawing
what
the line.
What is that, and what do you want with it?
Thank you.
Lane. Chamamu, chamamu, chamamu Lane. Chanka tu batalu. Chanka tu batalu. Olemu tats, 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 tats.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and I'm speaking today with Lainey Stern. If I'm not mistaken, Lainey, you started out primarily as an instrumentalist.
Yes.
And it was only later that you started bringing vocals and songwriting into your work.
Well, I started as a composer, you know, and as a guitar player. But I knew how to sing. I had sang in Europe, but I didn't write lyrics, and I didn't find myself. If I were to interpret a song, I would choose to interpret it on the guitar, not as a vocalist. So I've spent more time on the guitar and on the composing aspect than on my voice. But when I had that to a level where it was like not an 8-hour job a day, but a 4-hour job, maybe there was room for other things. So I picked the voice back up. And I'm really a multi-instrumentalist by nature.
Right.
I love playing percussion. I love to play anything with strings on it, like the ngoni or baritone guitars, 12-string guitars, tiples. You know, by nature, I'm like that. And so the singing added to it, came to it later.
Was that a conscious decision at a particular moment where you thought, okay, I'm going to bring this in? Or how did that kind of develop?
You know, at first, you know, today it's just, I didn't sing because everybody wanted me to sing and not play lead guitar.
Really?
Because that was the more common thing for a girl to do. So I just, like, out of spite, I said, like, you know what? It's not for you to decide what to do. Who died and made you? My dad. My dad didn't tell me what to do. What the fuck is wrong with you? I said, what is that? What's going on here? Like, so, you know, like, we had, like, funny situations in like, sound checks. I remember when I went on tour in Europe, and there was this, like, kind of, like, not ill-tempered sound guy that spent a lot of time on my mic. And finally, the bassist said, all she's gonna do is say on drums Keith Carlock, on bass Lincoln Goltz. What the hell do you need to EQ this for 3 hours? We'd like to eat. And the guy was dumbfounded. He thought I was a singer.
He thought
I was a singer. I was on the poster with a guitar. It said Lainey Stern guitar. And the guy spends half an hour on an EQ for the voice, which at this point I would really appreciate, because now I sing and play guitar and play percussion and play ngoni. So, but at the time I was just a guitar player, so people really were pushing. But then it was like, you know, 20 years ago, people did not want to see a female lead guitar player. They just all immediately made them nervous. And anybody that wanted to hire, you know, the lead guitar has a certain function in the band. It's supposed to bring down the house. Like when All Face take a solo, you know, that's like all the drum pedal broke, take a solo. You know, that's like your function. You're like the emergency break, like the rescue, 911, that's us. So I didn't sing, but then, you know, I noticed that the audience really likes it. So I did, you know, I started kind of like my husband does, like I would sing a blues at the end, or for the encore, I would bring like out a classic jazz song, like I'll Be Seeing You, or like and I'll sing it sort of like Chet Baker, you know, I'll take the solo on the guitar, but I'll sing the, it was sort of a tip of the hat to the audience. And I started singing, but then I started getting deeper into songwriting because, you know, I was a playwright in the beginning, so I liked writing. But it happened sort of organically because a lot of singer-songwriters like to put fancy jazz chords to their songs and more harmony and, you know, more And so I got to collaborate with singer-songwriters that, or I taught singer-songwriters harmony, like jazz harmony. And one of them was Larry John McNally, who's written for Don Henley and Bonnie Raitt. He's had many hits, and he lived in New York for a while, and he really liked some of my instrumental compositions, and he said we should write together. So out of that came a collaboration, and he encouraged me to write my own lyrics, because he had sort of a favor for authors in English that were not born speaking English, like Charles Simic, and he said they had always images that they thought, like, and my husband had always said that, like, you know, nobody would say that like you, because it's not that it's a direct translation from German, and German is a culture very close to ours here in America, but it's, you look at things a little bit different, you wouldn't say the same way, so the poetry profits from those things, you know, it's an asset, because you say things like a little bit different.
The house of peace is surrounded by water. Thousands of people are waiting. Thousands of people are waiting to get in. The house of thieves is covered in clouds. No sun rays get in.
Lainey, we could not do an interview with you without talking about the influence of Africa and the countries that you have explored there, both as a traveler and as a musician and a lover of language. And I know the most recent recording being Dakar Suite, and there's a whole story behind how that came together as well. But maybe talk about how that first became the continent of Africa, and then, of course, all the different, many different countries and different cultures that you've touched upon there, how that came to be a part of your world.
Actually, my first experience with Africa was my father's best friend, Joseph, who brought me an African brave parrot, Robert, who was my childhood companion. So Africa was very present for us in its culture. And then when I moved into becoming a blues artist, a rock and jazz guitar player, I was always told that the rhythms came from Africa with the slaves. So it was always quite mysterious. It's like, how does this bird have my, you know, my parrot, Robert, the knowledge of all the rhythms of jazz? And it was sort of precipitated by an Indian festival in Bombay that offered a 3-month course in Indian music. So you would stay for 3 months, perform and also teach and study and then perform in the jazz festival. So I did that in India. And then similarly in Africa, I was invited to the festival in the desert, and I met many African musicians and started working, and I started getting asked to come back there. And on the first trip, I met Basiku Kuyate, who is the best goni player in Africa right now, him and his family. And I performed with them at the festival, I invited them, you know, as a guest to perform with me. And I became a student. His wife is my friend, and she taught me how to sing in the African, the real call and response style. And I got, eventually I ended up in Salif Keita's band, and then in Senegal in Baba Mal's band. And just, you know, as a jazz musician, you go from concert to concert, and then you try to stay a little bit and stay around, and you make new friends. So that's how my African adventure started, at a festival like 4 hours into the Sahara from Timbuktu.
Lainey, if I understand the project Dakar Suite, there was a situation where real life intervened in such a way that the musicians, I'm trying to remember what the story was, when you started the recording, there was civil unrest, and you had to move the recording. Can you fill me in on that a little bit?
That was not just Dakar Suite, that was how my whole trip in Senegal started.
Oh.
I was working with Salif Keita, and he has a cultural center called the Mufu, and there was a studio there. So as a member of his band, you could record there. So I recorded 7 records there, but I was there when the coup d'etat happened, and then Al-Qaeda took over the country, and I couldn't go back. So I started recording in Senegal. I flew some of the musicians to Senegal, and we recorded there. And our first Senegalese record was Jalel, actually. And I still flew back to Bamako and mixed it in Salif's studio, but it got more and more uncomfortable because there were, you know, attacks on restaurants and hotels where Westerners were, and they took hostages. And, you know, we have a policy of not bailing out our hostages, and I didn't want to spend the next 10 years being negotiated over. And so I moved more and more into Senegal, and I Dakar Suite was recorded in Senegal and mixed in New York. I miss Mali terribly, terribly. And all my friends there, all the instrument builders. But at this point, I'm going to wait a little bit until things changed. Because it's, you know, when I went there the last time, the theater where we played, they had made a concrete wall around it, in those blocks they built so nobody can drive in with a bomb. And you know, you couldn't even see the thing, you know, the line, the name in lights, the wall was higher than it, so he's like, who the hell's playing behind the wall, you know, like you couldn't figure it out, you couldn't see it. I was there during the coup d'etat, and it was pretty stressful. I mean, there was like shooting in the street, there was like it was not cool. It was definitely not cool. I mean, the American embassy did a great job in getting all the Americans out without any casualties, but it was weird. I mean, you was in a hotel and you get like text messages from the embassy, stay put, don't go out, and send friends to get food, and then first plane, we'll keep you posted, and they registered you. And I had both. I have a double nationality. I'm German and American, so the German embassy would. And they finally had like one Air France plane where they got all the Europeans out. Mm. And I was, the hotel where I was, there was two UN workers and me. Two Italian UN workers and me. We were on the first plane out.
Malissaggio, la fula be malissaggio.
There's so many things that we could talk about, and it's such a treat to get a chance to talk shop with you on so many levels. Thank you for indulging my interest in stuff beyond the music. I think our listeners
absolutely.
Will find that of great interest. LaineyStern.com is the name of the website, and Lainey Stern Band is where you can find her on Facebook. I want to make sure folks understand that Lainey is spelled L-E-N-I, Lainey Stern, and LaineyStern.com is where you can go to find out all things Lainey Stern. Thank you so much for being a guest on Musician Spotlight.
Thank you so much.
What a treat.
For having me.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Lainey Stern. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes. Special thanks to the Crown Guitar Festival and Workshop for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.